Good morning. Today and tomorrow, we're going to be talking about women in the military. There's a lot of things women are not allowed to do in the military. One of them, technically, is they can't engage in direct combat, which would seem to limit them quite a bit. But there are some things that female soldiers do better than men. And it turns out, according to new research, that women are a lot better at counterinsurgency than their male counterparts. Joining me to talk about this is Army Reserve Major Paula Broadwell. She's a researcher at Harvard Center for Public Leadership. Also, retired Army Sergeant Genevieve Chase is still with us. She's the founder of American Women Veterans. We spoke to her last week as well. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
So, Genevieve, you heard the statistic that actually that clip that we used earlier this hour was from G.I. Jane, in which she was saying that 25% of jobs are off limits. And that movie was made in 1997. That's over 10 years ago. And it's still true that 25% of jobs are not available to women in the military.
Well, I don't have that exact statistic, but I know that not a lot has changed since then.
Why not?
Part of it has to do with the fact there are a lot of excuses, I think, that the military and the government and, you know, the Hill uses. And some of that has to do with the fact that we have a lot of important issues going on right now, a lot of important missions, and changing policy is not one of our priorities at this time.
Okay, so Paula Broadwell, you're an Army Reserve major, and you've also done a lot of research on these areas. And I'm wondering, the new research is showing that women are better at counterinsurgency than men are. Why is that? What makes that particular job better suited for women?
Well, I wouldn't say they're better. I'd say they're better at some tasks. And specifically, they're better at the task of engaging other women in the field. If a prime premise of counterinsurgency is winning hearts and minds, then you have to consider that 50% of most populations are women. And especially in conservative societies like Iraq and Afghanistan, dealing with Muslim women is a special case. And for a male soldier to, for example, try to search a woman at a checkpoint is very offensive to the woman in the society in whole. So employing female officers and soldiers in those roles, whether it's searching at checkpoints or searching through mosques in segregated areas where women are located, or even engaging through the female engagement teams that the Marines are running in Afghanistan right now, they're welcomed in the society. And even the Afghan men, for example, view them as less threatening than an American male soldier. So I don't think they're necessarily better, but just better at some roles, and all roles are important in counterinsurgency.
So is it just a truism that the women are better at dealing with the women and the men are better than dealing with the men?
No, I'd say counterinsurgency is different than conventional warfare because we have to use counterintuitive approaches and atypical approaches and think outside of the box. So women have been involved in research and peacekeeping operations and stability operations and other counterinsurgency type fields of research for a while. So at the strategic level, you're seeing more women involved in that type of oversight. But at the tactical level, they're involved in these roles that are more natural for them in dealing with women. But also backfilling for men just because we have such a high demand on our personnel. So women are out in the field doing convoy patrols. Medics are serving as gunners in Humvees because we need them there because we just don't have enough men, and they're proving themselves. So it's basically been a forced hand, I think.
So, Genevieve Chase, you were a former U.S. Army sergeant. You served, and in 2006, you were working in counterinsurgency in Helmand and Bagram province. Were you treated differently by the Afghan men than the male soldiers?
It ran the gamut. Sometimes I was treated, was very well received by Afghan men, and they were very willing to talk to me, oftentimes even proposing marriage. But a lot of other times we had instances where I was better able to communicate than some of the people that I served alongside, in addition to the fact that at times they did, a few times, they did react with some aggression or hostility. And in those instances, we were able to kind of isolate those people based off of, kind of separate them and kind of see where they aligned in terms of their religion and their beliefs and their culture. And they were a little bit more suspicious to us. Because most of the time, I was well received.
So, was it the kind of thing where you went ahead into the villages ahead of say a unit coming in to prepare the villagers for the soldiers' arrival?
No, we went out on teams and walked around and talked to villagers. We went through bazaars. We stopped at different locations. We were working on civil affairs projects to include a women's prison, which I was allowed access to, as well as a women's center where the men were not.
Paula Broadwell, you were an Army Reserve major, and you served for 5 years in places like Korea, Europe, Africa, Bosnia. Are there different outcomes depending on what culture the woman is deployed in?
Sure, absolutely, but it really comes down to probably the individual leader. If our young junior leaders are educated on how to engage in different cultures, then they're going to perform better. But if we force them into environments where they don't speak the language, they don't have an interpreter, and they're not familiar with the norms of that society, then they're more likely to blunder. So it really comes down to leader development. And what the military is trying to do right now is attract and train adaptive and flexible leaders and prepare them and equip them for the skills and that they'll need in these type of environments. So that's gender neutral. I think both men and women have to adapt to these new environments.
So, Paula, if the women are better, obviously, at handling the women and speaking with the women, does that make a difference when they return back to their unit after having maybe gone into a women's hospital or spoken with the women in the village and they're using, you know, their femininity, that they can form some kind of bond with the Afghan women? Does that then make a difference when they return back to their unit and they're back among their male peers?
I think a lot of the women are respected, and the men in their units respect and recognize the contributions they're making. In fact, many senior male military officers have recognized that we could not have fought these two wars without women. 220,000 women have fought in Iraq and Afghanistan since 9/11. That's 11% of the entire force. And it's interesting, if you do some historical analysis, 7,000 women fought in Vietnam, 33,000 women fought in the first Persian Gulf War, and as I mentioned, 220,000 women have been involved here now. I think that men at all levels recognize the invaluable contributions women make. That's not to dismiss that the challenges that exist for women in the military. There are still cases of rape and sexual harassment, but I think it comes down to educating men on the value of women in their units and then enforcing discipline and standards as far as their behavior.
Well, the 14% of our armed forces is women now. This is compared to 1950, when they're less than 2% of soldiers were women. And, you know, watching some of the footage coming out of Afghanistan, you've got these soldiers not even sleeping on cots in some of these places. When they're out in the field or out in some of these villages, they're sleeping on the ground, lined up like Vienna sausages on the ground. And that must be difficult when it's co-ed. Genevieve, is that a difficult thing when you're out in the field?
When you're working with a team of guys, you're part of the team, and they see you as a counterpart. And no, it's not difficult. We've had soldiers who did that on a daily basis, did missions outside the wire for weeks and days at a time, who, as you said, slept on the ground right next to their male counterparts. When you build that bond and that camaraderie, it's a very different interaction among your peers.
And you didn't feel nervous, Genevieve Chase. You served in Afghanistan in 2006. You never felt, having heard, as Paula Broadwell was mentioning, there are still some relatively well-publicized incidences of rape and sexual harassment and violence against women in the military. That doesn't make you nervous when you're serving?
No, it doesn't. I it's not something that I think about that's at the forefront of my mind. My job is on there. You know, I'm considering what my mission is, what my responsibilities are, and that's really what's at the forefront of my mind. I slept in a tent with a few hundred infantry guys in Kandahar province during transition. So, you know, during that time, I knew that I had my buddies with me, my teammates with me, and that I would be fine. But you have to be careful and you have to be smart, and we have to also educate our women soldiers and service members and how to take care of themselves, how to look out for themselves, and to make smart choices and smart decisions and to react in a way that they are concerned for their own safety as well as their peers.
Okay, so Paula Broadwell, an Army Reserve major, now that we have seen this new study showing how well women do in counterinsurgency, and knowing that we're going to be using counterinsurgency methods more, are we going to see a larger role for women in the military?
Well, it comes down to recruitment and retention. And as you can imagine, at the mid-career level, when women are in their early 30s and starting families, it's difficult to retain them, especially in this environment where they're deploying 4 and 5 years in a row. It's difficult for men, too, but I think our society places more pressure on women to be the primary caregiver. But if you look at the trends in women's positions in the military and even the percentages you mentioned, when I was born, women made up 1.8% of the military. Now we're 14% in the Army. The Air Force is 20%. Marines are a little less, only 6%. But the Marines are actually employing more women and have opened up new fields, okay. Two additional intelligence fields.
So maybe the takeaway here, Paula, is that we're making progress, but it's really slow. That's Paula Broadwell, Army Reserve Major, served 5 years of active duty and also an associate at the Harvard Center for Public Leadership. We also heard from Genevieve Chase, former U.S. Army surgeon in Afghanistan. We're going to continue this conversation tomorrow about women navigating cultures in the military.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.